The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience.
Welcome to the Business and Oil Hour with readings from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Sunday, February 3rd, 2019. This is Section F, the Oil Report. This article is entitled CO2 Emissions Forecast to Fall in 2019 and 2020 by Mella McEwen. Energy-related carbon dioxide emissions rose 2.8% in 2018, the largest since 2010, according to the latest short-term energy outlook issued by the Energy Information Administration. But the agency forecasts that emissions will fall this year and in 2020. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, said emissions came from energy consumption as opposed to emissions from energy production. "Our environmental partnership is focused on reducing emissions from energy production," he said in a phone interview. He said they are two sides of the same coin. Emissions from petroleum, primarily in the transportation sector, accounted for the largest share of total CO2 emissions. But emissions from natural gas, up nearly 10%, drove the overall increase last year, according to the EIA report. The agency attributed the rise in energy consumption and related emissions to weather conditions and continued economic growth, pointing to refineries producing cleaner fuels and automakers producing more efficient vehicles that are about 90% cleaner than in 1970. He said cleaner fuels have preyed on energy consumption. However, even with declines in emissions over the next 2 years, energy-related CO2 emissions are expected to be higher than 2017 levels, the agency said. "When you look at what the sources are, you have to look at which side of the coin you're looking at," said Staples. "We have a great story to tell on energy consumption," he said, pointing to refineries producing cleaner fuels and automakers producing more efficient vehicles that are about 90% cleaner than in 1970. He said cleaner fuels have played a significant role in the United States cutting air pollutants. "Emissions of CO2 are at 20-year lows, in part because of the rising use of natural gas," Staples said, forecasting natural gas will play an increasing role in energy generation and will contribute more to declining emissions. TXOGA, in early 2018, formed the Environmental Partnership, and Staples said it has more than doubled from the original 26 companies to 57 currently. "We know our member companies are investing in clean-burning fuels, carbon sequestration, methane emissions reductions, cleaner combustible engines. The industry is spending billions to improve the environment while ensuring a reliable source of energy," he said. From 2000 to 2016, the nation's oil and natural gas producers have spent more than $108 billion in developing zero and low-carbon fuels, he said. "Companies throughout the entire chain of production are making investments and commitments to develop market-based technologies that have good results," he said. "As these new technologies continue to be developed, the costs should come down and make them more attainable. If you think about it, today we're in an amazing position in the history of the state thanks to hydraulic fracturing, horizontal drilling, data analytics, new equipment that offers real-time information so operators can respond more rapidly. We will have more of that natural gas captured and go into the value stream that will benefit producers, mineral owners, and government entities." But he said, "The consumer is the ultimate judge of all we do. That's the way it should be. It should all be consumer-driven rather than the government picking and choosing winners and losers. It should not be market-driven. No matter which side of the environmental debate one falls on," he said, "oil and gas is playing a positive role in improving emissions." This article is entitled Hatch Resources, Ridgemont Equity Partners, iPermian Asset Acquisitions by Mella McEwen. A new partnership aims to take advantage of the continued opportunities offered by the Permian Basin's oil and natural gas resources. The newly formed Hatch Resources, based in Austin, has partnered with Ridgemont Equity Partners of Charlotte, North Carolina, in order to acquire Permian Basin assets. James Murchison, who serves as Hatch's chief executive officer, said in a phone interview that he has spent quite a bit of time in the Permian throughout his career, and it's a good time to be entering the basin. He said he bases his reasoning on the fact capital markets have turned away from the Permian. The steep drop in oil prices in the last 3 months of 2018 and the wide differential between the price for oil sold in Midland and oil sold in Cushing, Oklahoma, or on the Gulf Coast. Hatch will follow a very traditional private equity model, according to Murchison, who said he is excited about the opportunities available in the Permian Basin and the employees his company has hired. "The team we've assembled has deep technical and operational expertise," he said. "They've landed horizontal laterals and worked on large development projects. The new company has in mind a specific area of the Permian, but he declined to offer details. Once assets are acquired," he said, "they will be developed through horizontal drilling and then, after several years, sold to other operators." Hatch is also looking at opportunities to acquire minerals, he said. "The Permian Basin is still a target-rich environment," Murchison said. Murchison is joined in the formation of Hatch by Tripp McCuller, Vice President Land, Paul Fears, Vice President Geology, and Ty Lurch, Director of Finance. Over the past 3 years, they have been involved in the acquisition of approximately $4 billion in oil and gas assets. Their past experience includes roles at Vanada Oil and Gas, Black Oak, Carrizo Oil and Gas, and Callon Petroleum. Ridgemont Equity Partners is a middle market buyout and growth equity firm whose principals have invested about $4.4 billion since 1993. Its focus is on equity investments up to $250 million in industries ranging from business and industrial services to energy, from healthcare to technology and telecommunications. This article is entitled "Company Plans Enhancements to Permian West Texas Intermediate Futures Contract" by Mella McEwen. Intercontinental Exchange lost its premium West Texas Intermediate crude oil futures contract just 3 months ago, but the company is already offering enhancements to the contract. One of the new enhancements is the addition of more delivery terminals. Along with Magellan Midstream Partners' East Houston Terminal, MEH, delivery could be taken at Magellan's Galena Park Terminal and the Seabrook Logistics Terminal, which is jointly owned by Magellan and LBC Tank Terminals. These new terminals give market flexibilities in how they can take delivery against the contract, and they offer great access to the water and export markets, Jeff Barbuto, ICE's global head of sales and business development, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Other terminals are also being considered as delivery points for the contract. Barbuto said the changes are subject to relevant regulatory processes. Another enhancement ICE plans to launch, pending regulatory approval, is the ICE Permian WTI crude oil storage futures, deliverable at Magellan's East Houston terminal. Once approval is received, these futures would be listed on ICE Futures Europe and represent the right to store 1,000 barrels of Permian West Texas Intermediate crude at the terminal. The storage futures are a new type of risk management tool for the Permian WTI market in Houston. It will allow customers to acquire short-term storage at MEH, and long-term storage holders will now have a marketplace to monetize their unutilized positions, said Barbuto. The third enhancement ICE is planning for the Permian WTI crude oil futures contract is the addition of new data showing the levels of metals such as nickel, vanadium, and iron contained in Permian WTI. "We're providing an unprecedented level of transparency by publishing this new metals data," Barbuto said. buyers of U.S. crude have consistently asked for better visibility into metals data of barrels coming out of the Gulf Coast. He said that the new futures have continued to gain traction in the North American market since their launch in October. Designed to serve the hedging and trading opportunities in the growing Houston crude market, this contract launched in October, and open interest has already reached a high of 2,625 lots on January 18th. We've also seen more crude oil deliveries through the exchange at each expiry, so the feedback has been good, Barbuto said.
Texas Monthly, the National Magazine of Texas for February 2017.
Reporter, edited by Jeff Salomon. Lead, The Steve Jobs of West Texas, by Michael Agresta. Reading time, 45 minutes. John Hankey, the creator of Pokemon Go, can trace most of his obsessions to a childhood spent in a small town half an hour southeast of Abilene. The rolling, sparsely populated plains of West Central Texas are not an ideal locale to play a mobile internet game like Pokemon Go. Goldthwaite, wrapped in an early December mist, offers no cellular data signal whatsoever. Brownwood is spotty. But half an hour north on the road to Abilene, in Cross Plains, population 970, the clouds break and my cell signal returns. I pull into the gas station next to the Dairy Queen, take out my phone, and fire up the app. To write about John Hankey, the creator of Pokemon Go, I have come to see what his hometown looks like through the window of the game that he designed as a way to get kids off the couch and out of the house. Hunting Pokemon on foot, I'm the town's only pedestrian. Main Street otherwise shows no signs of life. Viewed on a smartphone's screen, however, downtown Cross Plains reveals a fantastic menagerie of creatures from the Pokemon universe. On the sidewalk, I quickly encounter a serpentine Ekans, a mousy Rattata, and an armadillo-esque Sandshrew. A few blocks farther on, at the Cross Plains area Veterans Memorial, I snare an armored Rhyhorn and a Nidoran, a sharp-eared rabbit with hooves. The memorial itself, with its solemn chiseled lists of townspeople who served in wartime, doubles in the world of the game as a Pokemon gym, where the creatures I've captured in my phone can do battle with digital gladiators left there by other Pokemon Go players. There's no winning Pokemon Go, but gyms like this one are where much of the game's action occurs. Other, less competitive phases of the game include catching wild Pokemon and nurturing them from unhatched eggs. As a rule, it helps for players to get outside and near places where people tend to congregate. Besides the Veterans Memorial, Cross Plains boasts two other Pokemon gyms, each tied to a site of cultural or historical significance. One is at the First Presbyterian Church, the other at the Robert E. Howard Museum, the early 20th century home of the town's most renowned son, the pulp writer who created Conan the Barbarian. The game also honors other notable local sites, such as the Higginbotham Brothers department store and a decades-old Dr. Pepper mural, with Pokestops where players can find digital goodies to help them catch, hatch, train, or evolve Pokemon. There is, though, one important site in Cross Plains that isn't marked on the game's map, Hankey's childhood home. Last year, Hankey, who is 50, was hailed by multiple news outlets as a genius and the next Steve Jobs, when Pokemon Go became the most popular mobile game in United States history, exceeding 40 million daily active users within a month of its July launch. More than just a game developer, Hankey is seen as a pioneer of an emerging technology known as augmented reality, or AR, that's central to the Pokemon Go game-playing experience. AR relies on technology that Hankey helped create. His 2001 startup, Keyhole, developed a markup language that enables programmers to write layers of annotation, imagery, or interface over 2D and 3D maps. A few years later, as a Google executive, he led the development of Google Maps and Google Earth. If Robert E. Howard put crossplanes on the map metaphorically, Hanke has done so literally, allowing anyone to view its layout or float down its streets from a computer halfway around the world. Everyone knows everyone in crossplanes, and the old-timers I run into during my Pokemon hunt recall Hanke as an intellectual standout from an early age, a special boy and an overachiever. He was valedictorian of his class of perhaps 21 or 22 students, according to his mother, Era Lee. Says Arlene Stevenson, my tour guide at the Howard Museum, where the walls are covered with Conan iconography, he left here and, to me, he just conquered the world. Speaking by phone from his office in San Francisco, where he's the CEO of Niantic, Inc., Hanke says he didn't completely fit into the small-town world of his upbringing, though on the surface he may have appeared to. I guess I could say I did the normal things, he explains. I played basketball, I was in the band, I was not an outcast hiding in the corner or anything, but I did have this complete other side of my personality. It was kind of pre-internet, so there weren't too many people to share that with. That other side of his personality revolved around computers. Hanke remembers walking past a math classroom in eighth grade and seeing a couple of high school guys playing a game on a TRS-80, one of the first home computers. Hanke wandered in and was quickly hooked. He credits his math teacher, Tom Barkley, with mentoring him. At one point, Barkley took his students to a computer programming competition at Baylor University, where they won third in the state. Hanke still has the trophy in his childhood bedroom. Era Lee has also held on to one of the first computer games Hanke created, a single-screen climber modeled on Donkey Kong that he coded on an Atari computer he had saved up for by mowing lawns. That was back in the day when you would send in your code and they would print it in Analog Computing magazine, and other readers could actually key in your programs, Hanke explains. I remember getting a check for $250 and being so proud of that accomplishment, going around bragging about it to Mr. Barkley and anyone else who would listen. During high school, magazines were Hanke's only link to a wider community of computer enthusiasts and to news of distant giants like Atari's Nolan Bushnell and Apple's Steve Jobs. This was in an era, I guess not that long ago, when people in rural Texas didn't travel really, Hanke says. I was reading about these things happening in California, which felt like it could have been the moon, this exotic, faraway place I could barely imagine existing, much less think that I'd ever visit. It was the epicenter in my mind, whatever it was, at the edge of the map. Upon graduating from high school, Hanke headed to Austin, where he was a Plan 2 honors student at the University of Texas. He chose to spend his college years immersed in the liberal arts. The math and the computer stuff was easy for me. It was something I just sort of did on my own, he says. It wasn't something I felt like I really needed to study. After college, he signed up for what sounded like the most outlandish opportunity available, a State Department job that posted him to Myanmar, a closed military dictatorship in Southeast Asia. In my mind, it was like being a crew member of the Starship Enterprise, he says. I think if that had existed, that's something I would have signed up for. Around the time of his foreign service, Hanke met and married his wife Holly, and though she initially joined him in Myanmar, the two eventually decided to build a life and family together, stateside. This led Hanke to business school at the University of California, Berkeley, in the mid-90s, then to a series of gaming and mapping startups, culminating in a CEO role at Keyhole, a U.S. intelligence-backed geospatial data visualization company that was acquired by Google in 2004. Hanke was made vice president of product management for Geo, the department overseeing Google's Maps and Earth products. Hanke realized that he had fully arrived in Silicon Valley in 2006 when an email popped up in his inbox bearing what appeared to be the address of his childhood idol, steve@apple.com. "I remember showing my wife and saying, 'Somebody's yanking my chain here,'" Hanke recalls. "I said, 'There's no way I believe this is the real Steve Jobs, but I'm going to reply and tell him I'm free to talk tomorrow just to see what happens.' I did that, and my phone rang the next day, and it was him. He made this very opaque pitch about this device that they were working on and how they really wanted to put maps on it. The device in question was the original iPhone. Hanke would help lead the charge to get Google Maps ready for mobile use. Jobs may have come to feel that Hanke did his job too well, given that Google Maps is widely regarded as superior to Apple Maps." Throughout his 6-year tenure at Google Geo, Hanke was always thinking about the gaming implications of his technology, and by 2010 he was finally ready to return to game building. He considered launching a startup, but Google's top brass agreed to create a startup-like environment within the company for his new effort, Niantic Labs. In the 7 years since, Niantic has gone from an unknown with one relative flop, the Field Trip app, to minor notoriety with a cult hit mobile game Ingress, to, with Pokemon Go, a success so enormous that, to discourage overeager Pokemon hunters from banging down the doors, the company has removed its name from the office building it calls home. In the meantime, Niantic has been spun out of Google, with Nintendo as a major investor. Niantic's financial information isn't public, but when Pokemon Go launched last July, Nintendo's stock valuation surged by about $12 billion. Hanke has come a long way from Cross Plains, but he hasn't forgotten where he came from. In fact, he has held on to his family's small ranch outside of town and frequently visits Era Lee, now 87. Cross Plains today is still the kind of town where you can walk into the senior center at midday and find the mayor, Bob Kirkham, shooting the breeze with the past mayor, Ray Purvis, over lunch. Like many small towns at this longitude, the demographics skew a bit older than the national average. In Cross Plains, nearly a quarter of the population is older than 65. Nationally, it's more like 15%. Most folks seem to have never played Pokemon Go. They're likely to refer to smartphones and mobile devices as computers. One person calls the slashes braces and pointy brackets of programming languages those funny things. Hanke did get to see his two worlds come together in 2013, when Niantic hosted a global meetup of Ingress players in Cross Plains. He timed it to coincide with the town's annual Robert E. Howard Days weekend, when dozens of Conan fanatics descend on the town. Even so, the Ingress players stood out. "I was riding with the police at night," Purvis recalls. "People were calling in, wanting to know what was going on. It was crazy. People down in the park at midnight." Ingress is similar to Pokemon Go in many respects. It involves a game world layered over the real world, with important locales for gameplay associated with cultural and historic landmarks. The world of Ingress is a zero-sum battle for supremacy between two teams, the Enlightened and the Resistance, who duke it out for control of turf and resources. Upon downloading the game, users are required to pick a side. The mythology of Ingress hinges on an alien technology that has been loosed upon an unprepared humanity. One side trusts the technology unquestioningly, and the other is fighting for what might be called civilian control over it. When Hanke plays Ingress, he sides with the Enlightened, or the techno-skeptics. The Enlightened aren't necessarily totally anti-technology, but they're sort of humanists, explains the former liberal arts major. Their philosophy is, hey, you're a human being. You aren't meant to just exist in some purely digital substrate. You're meant to be out in the world, walk around, soak in some sunshine, fully experience being a human being. Hanke's game world affiliation with the Enlightened reflects values he picked up in Cross Plains as a kid. He happily recalls youthful days spent shelving books and chatting with the town's longtime librarian, Billy Ruth Loving, who helped foster his interest in books and culture. Loving is long deceased, but I came across a plaque bearing her name in the new children's wing of the library while hunting for a Pokestop near a bust of Edgar Allan Poe. Along similar lines, Hanke's late father, Joe, served as the town postmaster while also running the family ranch. These days, Hanke is an outspoken advocate of getting outside by any means necessary. Hanke has tried to encourage passions for culture and the outdoors in his own children, now 18, 16, and 10. Early on, he came to see computers and video games as, at best, an unsteady ally in the struggle to raise active, curious kids. Steve Jobs and Nolan Bushnell and the other Silicon Valley pioneers did too good a job of building these incredibly rich, screen-based experiences, he says. It's like sugary breakfast cereal. You throw that into the mix, and naturally that's what your kids want all the time. I'm not a Luddite, he adds. It's not that I didn't want screens in my home. There's so much they can do for us, even for the kids' development. The thing that had initially drawn me to computers was walking past a classroom and seeing these guys playing the Star Trek game on the TRS-80. Games as an entry point to technology, programming, and all the positive things that come from developing that skill set, I could see, but I was struggling with also wanting to get my kids outside. Hanke now describes Field Trip, his first app with Niantic, as coming from the high school librarian side of me. The program aspired to comprehensively catalog historical and cultural sites of interest and alert users anytime they drove or walked near one. He developed the idea, he says, on family road trips when he'd see signs for historical markers whiz past and wonder what he was missing. Field Trip managed to build a deep catalog of sites, but it never caught on with a broad public. It didn't have that virality, Hanke admits. It wasn't something my kids were particularly into. Ingress aimed to fix that. The pivot was, how can we create a compelling outdoor experience that has those same sugar-coated breakfast cereal addictive qualities, but is wrapped in an experience where you're outside, seeing new places, getting exercise, talking to real people in real life, Hanke says. You lure people in under the auspices of this sci-fi game, but you show up with your kids and, oh, there's a historical marker there. Oh, this is a stop by Ulysses S. Grant when he traveled through Texas. Or this is a ship buried in downtown San Francisco. Niantic takes its name from a 19th-century whaling vessel that was eventually consumed by the city as San Francisco infilled its harbor. Ingress was a cult phenomenon, but it attracted one important fan, Tsunekazu Ishihara, the head of the Pokemon Company. Our pitch meeting was just a sort of mutual love fest, Hanke says. As Pokemon Go launched in America, Hanke was on vacation in Japan with his oldest son, who was about to leave home for college. They had planned the trip together months before the game's launch date was set, and Hanke decided to go through with it, even though he might miss the biggest moment of his professional life. Hanke describes following the game's viral explosion from afar as surreal. He recalls walking in a bamboo forest in Kyoto with his son while the gravity of Pokemon Go's success was just beginning to sink in. We were walking in this very serene, otherworldly place, And meanwhile, I'm getting updates on my phone. Jimmy Fallon's talking about Pokemon Go and all of that craziness, Hanky says. It was strange for it to happen, but it was even weirder, I think, for me to experience it remotely. It wasn't yet launched in Japan, so I was hearing about it from the internet and from texts coming in from my wife. You're not going to believe this. People are all over our downtown playing Pokemon Go. With Pokemon Go, Hanky has realized his dream of a viral, addictive game that helps kids get outside and appreciate their physical and cultural surroundings. When he returned home from Japan, Hanky saw the benefits firsthand with his youngest son. There was a point when he was literally begging my wife or me to take him outside. He wanted to walk 5 kilometers early one Sunday morning because he wanted to hatch a Pokemon egg, Hanky says. That was a moment when I was just like, victory.
You've been listening to the Business and Oil Hour with articles read from the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American. This broadcast is heard Friday mornings at 6, Saturday mornings at 5, and Sunday nights at 7 on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio and streamed live at recordinglibrary.org.